Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players. Build a Pick'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Pit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant Pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm Big Waz, big back from vacation. Was in New York, was in Cartagena, back to New York, but I'm back off of vacation. Much needed rest and relaxation, much needed family time, friend time, fun time, but we're back to work and joined as always on the west side of Los Angeles, my brother, my partner, Nando Vila. What's going on, bro?
Feeling good. Good to have you back. I missed your beautiful voice. I had to have guests on, you know, like it's not the same. Like I was talking to Anna Kasparian yesterday, friend of the show, and she was like, I appreciate, the episodes that you guys have guests on, but I like it when you and Waz just shooting the shit. You guys like barely prepare,
exactly.
And you just shoot. It's like a uninterupted just convo,
free flowing conversation.
Yeah.
But I did. Shouts to DB. Shouts to what's the councilman from LA? Ugo, I forget his name.
Ugo Soto Mendoza.
Okay, Ugo Soto Mendoza. Shouts to both of them. DB killed it on the Afghanistan tip.
Sorry, Ugo Soto Martinez.
Soto Martinez killed it, just sort of explaining what local government means in the city of Los Angeles. I had to go out and research them, the gang units in the LAPD.
See that shit?
What the fuck? That was crazy because I had never even heard of that. But yeah, shouts to the guests that came through, of course. Thank you, Nando, for holding it down. But we're back this week. Just want to just touch base on a couple of things. As you guys know, we watch cancel culture and liberalism with a very close eye here on this podcast. And something completely hilarious and ridiculous happened with a recent hire for the new Jeopardy host that me and Nando want to get into. But first, man, we pulled out of Afghanistan basically as I started my vacation. Joe Biden stuck to his guns. Many people have talked the talk about getting the hell out of these forever wars. Barack Obama, Donald Trump even paid lip service to it, even going so far as to negotiate a departure with the Taliban under his administration. But Joe Biden actually did it. He freaking left Afghanistan. And what's most important to me, Nando, as I'm reading up on Afghanistan and listening to hours and hours of podcasts from experts who've been paying attention to it all along, what you learn is a couple of things. One, yes, we knocked out Al-Qaeda pretty quickly. We beat back the Taliban. We sent them scurrying. We were able to conquer and secure Kabul, which is the sort of the city epicenter of the country. But guess what? The country is basically 75% rural. And very quickly after that, the Taliban took root in the countryside, and that was it. They were going to be intractable, basically, period, forever. So for essentially 15 years, we knew there was no way to win this thing. 15 years. Again, the stated goal was to go in, make Al-Qaeda pay. Taliban had previously collaborated with Al-Qaeda, so we were going to make them pay. We needed to kill bin Laden. That was the alleged, anyway, goal of invading that country in the first place. And we did that shit in pretty short order, even if you want to say, all right, it took us till 2011 when bin Laden was finally captured and murdered. Okay, cool. 2011, that was 10 years ago. Yet we still continued to pour money, resources, American troops in that country for a war that we knew we could not win. Okay, Barry did his stupid surge. Freaking Trump was just droning the place into smithereens. All of this shit. So that, and again, these are the key stats for me. And I said this on TYT yesterday, Nando. But this is the key stat for me: 20 years, $2 trillion. The government you poured those resources into collapsed in 7 days.
Yeah,
yeah. A fucking week. A week. That's insane, man. That's just like, dude, like I can't even. There's nothing to compare that to. Like to spend 20 years on a project and $2 trillion on a project and tens of thousands of Afghans died behind this project. American troops died behind this project. 20 years, $2 trillion. It collapsed in a week. That's pathetic.
Yeah, people compare it to the fall of Saigon, the famous images of the, you know, people leaving in the helicopter from the embassy in Saigon. And the South Vietnamese government, which we supported, propped up, which was seen as horribly corrupt at the time, similar to the Afghan government in that sense. That government, after the United States troops pulled out of Vietnam, lasted 2 years. This one lasted 7 days. Yeah, it's almost like it had zero popular legitimacy because it was seen as just a foreign puppet government and, you know, just designed to essentially steal all the aid money coming in, billions of dollars, the whole Afghanistan thing is pretty remarkable to me because seeing Joe Biden pull out and like you said, this is a genuinely courageous thing that Joe Biden has done, which I did not expect to see at all. I expected a kind of half pull out, you know, to see him just be like, no, we're out. And then just see every structure of the media from every single direction just go absolutely apeshit on Biden's decision to pull out of Afghanistan. I mean, I saw Richard Engel, who's the foreign correspondent of NBC News, one of the most famous foreign correspondents in American journalism, longtime kind of foreign reporter, the guy who, like, with like the safari jacket, who's like, you know, we're here, you know, like doing the foreign correspondent thing. He was like, you know, he's been having like an absolute meltdown over this Afghanistan thing. And he was like, this is the biggest capitulation to Western values from any US president ever or whatever. And it's like, shut the fuck up. Like, just shut up.
That's absurd.
Shut up. And Biden, to his credit, and like his, and to my surprise,
what we did in Cambodia and Laos. What are you talking about?
Yeah, shut the fuck up. Yeah. Biden, to his credit, has just stuck to his guns. I mean, you know, he gave a speech yesterday from the White House that was just like, no, shut up. Like, this basically is suck it. Like, I don't know. Let's see, producer Sean, we have some sound. Let's maybe play some of the sound.
There's nothing low grade or low risk or low cost about any war. It's time to end the war in Afghanistan. As we close 20 years of war and strife and pain and sacrifice, it's time to look to the future, not the past. To a future that's safer. To a future that's more secure. To a future that honors those who served and all those who gave what President Lincoln called their last full measure of devotion. I give my word with all of my heart. I believe this is the right decision, a wise decision, and the best decision for America.
And he's absolutely right. I mean, the again, don't listen to any of these fucking media freaks who are trying to muddy the waters on this decision. It is an unquestionably necessary and good decision. And the last few days of the war in Afghanistan, I mean, it officially ended today, right? Like yesterday, I guess, August 31st was the official end of the war in Afghanistan. And the last few days have been just a perfect, to me, microcosm of what the broader U.S. war on terror is. And that is that, you know, there was this, as the United States was pulling out and, you know, evacuating all these people from the airport, there was a terrorist attack, not from the Taliban, from a different group called ISIS. Remember them? Mm-hmm. It's like the ISIS version in Afghanistan, who are opposed to the Taliban. They're like, the Taliban
aren't militant enough.
They're not militant enough. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, oh, look, they're collaborating with the foreign invaders. You know, they're, you know, whatever. So the ISIS does the bombing. Okay. 13 American service members are killed in the bombing. Something like 100 Afghans, or close to 100 Afghans, are killed in the bombing as well. Many of whom, or most of which, were killed by American soldiers who, when the bomb went off, just started shooting their guns and just started like spraying, like, you know, crowds with bullets and killed a bunch of people. Okay, so that's that incident. And then the United States, in response to that incident, says, oh, well, we need to retaliate. We need to retaliate. We can't let this, you know, we can't let this go unpunished. So the United States in the next couple of days conducts two drone strikes, one against these two guys who they say were ISIS people. Again, we have to take them at their word for that. And then another one on in Kabul on a Toyota Corolla, which they say was packed with explosives. They droned that car in Kabul, killed 10 people, including an entire family and several children. And the family members say that the guy who was killed, the guy who was driving the car, had nothing to do with ISIS, that he was just like a mechanic driving around. And the U.S. is like, no, there were bombs in the car. And we know this. We saw it from a drone up, you know, up in the sky. We saw that they were loading up this car with explosives. And, you know, the family's like, nope, this is not what it is. We were just some fucking people. And again, all the children that you guys murdered, they had nothing to do with it. And so like that, but that is what the war on terror is. That is what these drone strikes are. It's like, we think that there's some terrorists there and then we just fucking drone them. Usually we kill a bunch of people, many of whom had nothing to do with it. And then we wonder why people gravitate towards things like the Taliban or ISIS or Al-Qaeda or whatever, any of these groups. Like,
to understand.
It's, of course, like that's what it is. So like, unless you just, unless you, the powerful invading force, the one who have no business being there in the first place, pull out, that cycle of violence is going to happen over and over and over and over again. The US is going to bomb something. They're going to kill a bunch of people. The people who survive are like, fuck that. And then they're going to gravitate towards terrorist groups. They're then going to attack American soldiers. We're going to be like, we can't let this go unpunished. Let's drone them again. And then over and over and over,
over and over and again. Over and over again. And you know, we live in America where people hit the streets, invade the Capitol because they got to get vaccines and wear masks, right? Like, that's how angry people get. Now imagine some foreign entity just out of the sky just murdered your niece, your nephew, just for the sake of it. How angry that would make you. I mean, like, give me a fucking break here. It's ridiculous. It's obvious what the case is. And, you know, it's important that our listeners understand what the project was really about. It's not really about bringing freedom and democracy to Afghanistan. It's like, all right, we might be able to build a nation in the Middle East where we have unlimited influence over the leadership structure. We could build the society and economy, you know, basically a purely capitalist structure where we don't got shit like the FCC and the SEC and all these regulations. We could just do, you know, unadulterated capitalism in this new country that we make. Here's the experiment. That's the one component of it. And the second component, of course, they don't see these people as equal people, right? Like, they, you kind of don't have the right to govern yourself. You don't have the right to, you know, whatever religious beliefs you have or whatever, because it is brown people in the Middle East. That's barely basically what it comes down to. And it actually, you know, of course, and it can't be said enough, the third component of this is literally the military-industrial complex. It is the guys who come in and train soldiers, right? Or train Iraqi soldiers. I mean, excuse me, Afghanistan soldiers. Or, you know, they're feeding the troop presence that's over there like $200-something per troop so that they can eat like apples and PB&J every single day. It's like all of these people, they're building roads in a country where most of these people get around on donkeys and horsebacks. Like, there's no cars in the fucking country. Like, an American company comes in and builds that stuff that nobody needs, nobody wants, and we're footing the bill as taxpayers. All it is just a massive wealth transfer to that class of people. And that's the point of having it go for 20 years. And Joe Biden's like, guys, y'all made trillions of dollars.
Yeah, it's enough.
It's over.
Did you see the videos of like the Taliban guys on Twitter? I mean, it's so funny that social media exists for this kind of moment, you know, because like back in the day, you know, you wouldn't see, you know, some Taliban guy couldn't post, you know, his little videos on Twitter. And these days you can see them and there's like videos of like a Taliban guy, you know, going like, I love this Ford Explorer. Like, you know, like some, they're like sitting in some like, you know, it's like, I also love the Toyota, you know, like the Toyota Land Cruiser or whatever. You know, they're just like riding around on the court.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And like the thing now you're seeing is a lot of like these videos of like Taliban guys dressed in. Did you see that video of the Taliban guys dressed in full like special forces American gear that they like? Oh my God, it's so good. They're just like walking around an airport hangar, like looking like American GIs, but then the camera turns and it's a Taliban guy. and like I've seen like a lot of people like freaking out because like, you know, they're like, do you know that the Taliban now control more Black Hawk helicopters than 75% of the world's nations, and like they actually have more Black Hawk helicopters than like the British Air Force or whatever. And it's like, who gives a shit?
Who cares? What are they gonna do with
that? Who gives a shit?
Like, and that's another thing I think Biden realized too, is like that whole scaring the shit out of Americans with Taliban and like that's done. Americans have moved on. They're not scared of these cats no more. Y'all better start peddling China and all this other shit as scary boogeyman. Yeah. Like this, because it's just cat. Like the idea that these dudes in pickup trucks in the middle of the freaking countryside of Afghanistan is somehow going to, you know, choke your baby in its crib in fucking Oklahoma somewhere. It's absurd. They used to be able to convince people of this. Like, people in Nebraska really thinking that some dude in a turban and a beard is going to come choke the life out of them. Like, they used to be able to scare the shit out of people with that kind of stuff. But people are over it. Like, it's over. And again, like, the thing that people need to understand is that this shit has been over for 15 years. Literally, all the Taliban has is time. That's their country. Yeah. They're not going anywhere.
They can't go anywhere. Yeah.
Like, on the list of importance when it comes to the American power structure, the foreign policy leaders, et cetera, like, when it comes to the ruling class, on the list of importance, Afghanistan might make the top 200. Whereas for the fucking Taliban, it's number one with a bullet because it's their fucking crib.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here from Cinephobe. Yeah, that podcast. It's a good one. Ascertain. Telling you right now, Prize Picks, that's the way to go. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 3 million members. The easiest and most exciting way to play DFS is just you against the numbers. You pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. It's demon time. That's right. You're asking, what does that mean? It's demon time. I'll tell you. Demons and Goblins, the newest and most exciting way to play at Prize Picks. Squares marked with red demons or green goblins get you different payouts. You can now win up to 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. That's insane. That's insane of Prize Picks to do. You know what else is insane? They offer injury insurance so that your entries stay in play, even if one of your players gets injured. For football and basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, that player projection won't count against you, and the rest of your entry stays alive. Prize Picks is the only DFS platform with an injury insurance policy. And by the way, they now offer Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account. This football, basketball, any season you're playing. Me personally, I'm taking more than points on Joel Embiid all the time. I'm taking more than assists on Tyrese Halliburton. I'm taking less than points on Jordan Poole. Those seem to be the easy money makers for you. And you're probably wondering, Zach, how do I get involved in this? You go to prizepicks.com/ding and use code DING, D-I-N-G, for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/ding. Use code DING, D-I-N-G, for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
You know? And so it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Seeing the media to me has been one of the most disgusting things that I can remember. I mean, the media's performance throughout this whole Afghanistan pullout has been one of the most shameful things that I can remember. You know, it's up there with the WMDs were in Iraq kind of thing. But because, like, if you look at it coldly without this sort of, you know, fucking emotional investment that these people have in this stupid ass war, the pullout in Afghanistan has been pretty good. You know, like the media narrative has been like, oh, well, obviously the war needed to end, but like the way they did it, it's the way they did it that's the problem. Like, they, you know, it was chaotic and it wasn't planned. It was like, as if like pulling out of a war is ever chaotic, not chaotic. Like they made a whole fucking movie about Dunkirk, okay? You know, like pulling out is not easy. sorry.
Oh, ain't that the truth?
but really, at the end of the day, like, there was tens of thousands of people in Americans in Afghanistan. That logistically is a very difficult thing. They cut a deal with the Taliban. The Taliban has aided the United States in getting those people out. They've actually been, you know, helping secure the airport and you know, all the routes to the airport, and have been actually been playing ball pretty remarkably that in the pullout. Like, I think the narrative that the narrative the media portrays to regular people is that, like, the Americans are like pulling out while the Taliban are like, you know, bloodthirsty, like, you know, like just hordes at the gate, you know, like, and it's the Taliban has been cooperating with the United States to help in all the logistics of getting these people out. Why? Because they want to fucking govern the country. And the last thing they want is for the United States to like have any excuse to come back or to send, like, even if it was like a small Delta force or whatever, like they just want them out. It's like, okay, like we just got to collaborate with you for like 2 weeks. Okay. And then you're out. Okay, great. We'll do it. And Biden, to his credit, even despite all the fucking massive pressure from the media and from the UK, like those fucking ingrates, those fucking British disgusting clowns. Pigs who are like, can you believe it?
You guys don't even have a fucking army, bro. You guys have allowed the United States to be your fucking army. You don't get a fucking say in this shit. You don't matter on the global stage, Britain. Yeah. The fuck out of here. Go kick rocks.
Get the fuck out of here. You don't even have enough, as many Black Hawk helicopters as the Taliban, you fucking losers. But like, you know, they were like, you need to extend the deadline. You need to extend it, like, you know, and not understanding that that is the most risky thing you can do. Because if you go back on your word from the Taliban that you're going to be out by August 31st, you're just giving them an excuse to fucking start murking people again.
Because at the end of the day, the Taliban is an organization and a structure that has factions like any other organization. You give those more militant type of people in the Taliban an excuse to be like, look, the fucking infidels, the devils, those white fucking devils, they said they were going to do something on the front end, they do something on the back. They apply pressure to the rest of the organization to do something retaliatory in exchange. Yeah. And again, this shit bears mentioning, Nando. The reason why you're dealing with the Taliban in Kabul is because your government that you've propped up for 20 years failed in 7 days. That's why it's not Karzai's government, you know, the clean transition going from American, and, you know, we propped you up, we turned you guys into America light, and now we're going to help you guys evacuate all the people you want, blah, blah, blah. That's why that's not happening. Like Halliburton, you failed. All of you guys.
You lost the war.
We lost it sucks the to lose the war.
Yeah. Yeah.
You fucking There's no lost. Clean...
Yeah.
Period.
No, it's been, I mean, I'll never forget these last few weeks, because it was the kind of thing where we had, I think on some level, absorbed the reality that maybe we'd just be there forever, you know. And there's some people who were saying that, like, we should just be there forever, like we should just be there for, you know, like it'll just be like a thing that we do. Yeah,
I was like, are we gonna turn them into the 51st state? Like, what does that even mean, be there forever? That doesn't even make any fucking sense whatsoever. Like, nobody believes that. Like, so many lies have been told over and over. It was Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda, then it was the nation building, then it was this, then we had to do the surge, and then we had to, and it's just like, bro, like, you kind of lose the plot after a certain amount of time. And it's just so obvious, like, this shit was never going to work. These guys have been factional, and these tribal disputes have been going on for literally, and no, this is actually literally, like truly thousands of years. These disputes have been happening in that region of the world. The hubris of the United States foreign policy establishment to think we could just go there and put our dicks on the table, and our dicks would be so huge and shiny and American that everybody will have no choice but to suck on it. It's just absurd. It's craziness.
Yeah, they put their dicks on the table, and some fucking Taliban just chopped them off.
Chopped it off. That's it. That's what happened. And people could complain and all of that shit. But the bottom line is, man, we gave Halliburton, Raytheon, Special Forces, we gave all of you motherfuckers 20 years to pull it off. Yeah. Unlimited resources, unlimited funds, just unlimited opportunity to prove that you could do what you set out to do, and you fucking like, this is a failure of that set of people. And again, nobody in the media is talking about who lost this war, right? Like, they're sitting around bitching about what Biden's doing on his way out. Nobody's saying, like, damn, the strategy was shit. How much did those defense contractors get? How much did we pay them? What did we pay them for? Can we do a rundown of what actually the accounting of who was in there, what their job was, and whether they performed that function? Can we do an audit of this war in the media? Yeah. Let's do that one by one. Let's bring Dick Cheney in here. Let's dig up Rummy from the dead. Let's get George Bush in here. Let's get all of them in here. And let's do a personal accounting of like, all right, we allocated this, because y'all said y'all was going to do this, that, and the third. How much of this shit got accomplished?
Yeah.
Never. That's never going to happen in the fucking media. That would, like, that just would never happen. Instead, they sit around and bitch because Biden's exit is not cute enough. It's not seamless enough. Ridiculous.
The one takeaway you got to, for the people at home, remember this for the next time they try to sell you on one of these things. Yeah. You know, they're going to be like, oh, look at the bad people in wherever the fuck country. Look, just be like, the burden of proof has to be so high.
Yeah.
You know?
Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, you fucking name it. I mean, and you know, because a lot of this shit doesn't get coverage in the mainstream media. Like, I don't know the last time somebody in the mainstream press talked about the Congo. We just sent a bunch of fucking troops over there. We got a bunch of people in Somalia because allegedly that's where terrorism is thriving and living today. Like, we're still bombing the shit out of Yemen. You know, like, there's so much other shit that we're doing, but the next time they want to be like, oh, there's a boogeyman with the turban on and we got to get
on. The bad man. The bad man.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. We'd love to see it.
Yeah, and so, you know, we move on from the triumph of Joe Biden finally getting the hell up out of Afghanistan to just more liberal bullshit. I'm not
the second most important political story since you've been gone. You missed out. Like, while you were on vacation, there were two important political stories. One was Afghanistan fallout, and the other one was the new Jeopardy host. Those are the two most important things in America. Yeah.
So briefly, Nando, can you run the people down on the dude that was hired and subsequently what brought him down?
Yeah. So, okay. So while you were gone was Jeopardy. You know the Jeopardy, the show, the trivia, beloved trivia show. Alex Trebek. So that Alex Trebek dies. And so then the search for the new Jeopardy host is underway. And the Jeopardy host gig in the hosting kind of world is the most desired gig in America. It is like, because it's super easy. It's very plum. Easy in the sense that, like, you don't have to work too hard. You have to be just talented,
reading,
obviously.
You're just like, reading questions talented, and answers.
Yeah, and, like, and they shoot it, like, they stack the episodes, and so, like, the production schedules are very, you know, Trebek was working, like, you know, 8 weeks out of the whole year, and he was getting millions of dollars. You know, it's a nice little gig.
Great job.
You know? Yeah, and so the Jeopardy host is like a very desired gig. Like, everyone threw their hat in the ring, you know, like George Stephanopoulos wanted it. And, you know, like, you know, several other people.
Aaron Rodgers tried to use it as leverage against his football team.
Hell yeah. There you go. So yeah, Aaron Rodgers wanted it. There was like an online campaign to get LeVar Burton from Star Trek on it. So they test a bunch of little hosts, you know, they give them like a week or whatever. And then at the end of the day, this guy named Mike Richards, who had become the executive producer of Jeopardy a year before Trebek died, he gets it, right? He's named the host. Sony Pictures Television becomes the host. And immediately, people are very, very angry. And the people online are immediately like, can you believe this? This is the most the thing. And so then they start, you know, digging into this guy's past. And turns out that he was on a podcast several years ago in like 2012 or some shit, where he said some off-color jokes. Turns out that there was a possible sexual harassment or discrimination lawsuit at one of his previous gigs that was settled out of court. The people rally around, and this becomes like the cause, the most important cause to fight for in America, and they take him down. He's out. Not only is he out as Jeopardy host, he's out as executive producer of Jeopardy. He is out. This thing, you know, the people rallied around and they got their thing. So then who gets the gig? A woman named Maim Bialik, who is Blossom, if you guys remember Blossom, the sitcom from the 90s.
Yeah, 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 I remember Blossom. Mm-hmm.
So she becomes character. The host. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, the main Blossom. Yeah.
Okay, yep.
So she becomes the host.
Okay.
And then they start sleuthing, you know, they start sleuthing her.
Okay, and then what happened with her?
And then they find some comments that she's made in the past about C-sections that she doesn't like, that she thinks that C-sections, like a woman that needs a C-section, like a baby should be able to be born naturally. a baby should be able to be born naturally. And so like now there's heat on Blossom, you know? So I mean, I'm just watching this go down, you know, and like I'm not trying to like, you know, minimize the Mike Richards things or whatever. I just find the sort of the passion with which people kind of treat this thing, the Jeopardy host. The fucking insane. Game show host, like that. It's like, wait, it needs to be the person that I want. And because it just made me think about like how our culture now has become the only thing that matters, in that because politics is so difficult and politics has been so kind of removed from democratic accountability that, you know, we always talk about like the George Floyd protests, largest protests in American history, and nothing happened. Like the system was able to just absorb that and just kind of nothing changes, right? Because the democratic structures in the American system are so undemocratic that people just feel like we yell, we tweet, we do the thing on, and the politics doesn't change. Like nothing changes because we just don't have the ability to do it within our system. So what do the people turn to? The Jeopardy host. That we can have an effect on, that we can influence, you know? So it makes us feel like we're having a positive effect on the world. You know, it makes us feel like we're doing something, right? And I'm not trying to like, I don't want to make this seem like that what Mike Richards said was okay or whatever. It's not about that.
I want to say it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, it's just like the people that like get very invested in this kind of thing.
Yeah, that's craziness. It's craziness. The idea that you would be like, I can't believe he said that on a podcast 9 years ago. Who gives a shit? And the thing is, it's nobody's life is made better or worse by Mike Richards having this job or not having this job. Like, it's so inconsequential as to, like, it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. The idea that we would concentrate our efforts into, you know, creating a society in which people are held accountable for podcasts, things they said on a podcast 12 years ago. Not that this guy beat his wife, not that this guy abused his children, not that like, what he said, some shit you didn't like on a podcast. That's his crime. He said some shit as a podcaster. Again, not that he even said it like while he was the head of state or while he had all these people's lives in his hands and he crushed them. And he was a podcaster giving takes, and you didn't like some of them from 9 years ago. How can this be a thing that matters? It's beyond me, man.
Or if Blossom has some weird thoughts about C-sections, like who gives a shit? Like what? Why is it relevant to the...
It doesn't matter to the job.
But like, also like, I'll just like, just caring that much about the Jeopardy host in the first place to me is like kind of infantile, you know? Like, it's just the fucking Jeopardy host. Like, just fucking watch the show. Who gives a shit about what they think about, like, you know, rearing children? I mean, I remember like you talked about it a lot. Myers-Leonard thing, and maybe because I'm a Heat fan, but like it happened, but Myers-Leonard is like what, like the 200th best player in the NBA, you know, or like or something like that, like just a total kind of whatever guy, and like, but the feeling that we have in an age in which we have no power, right, in which democratic control has been basically stamped out by the system, right? Because labor unions have been beaten back, and because you know, the Senate has become even more undemocratic than it always was, and because, you know, the House is so gerrymandered that it doesn't matter like how angry you get, for a million reasons, the American political system has basically been able to remove the little democracy part out of it. The banks still get richer, the rich still get richer, no matter how much you yell. Like the most awful people in the world continue to get richer and your life continues to be slightly shittier every year. That feeling of being stuck and of not being able to influence events in the political system is what is driving us to then try to influence whether the, you know, eighth rotation player on the Heat said a bad thing while he was streaming a fucking Fortnite game or some shit with some 12-year-olds, you know. That's what's going on there. And I just want people to understand that's the phenomenon at play. Because we feel powerless in politics, we feel the need to exert our influence in any way we can. And we can in these kind of discrete cultural things, which don't affect anything. They don't matter at all, but it makes us feel like we're doing something.
Yeah, it's just sad. It's just sad the things that people pretend, or not, I shouldn't even say pretend. It's just sad to watch people get riled up over the most mundane stuff. Like, I never thought I'd see the day with the Jeopardy host was able to galvanize a sizable amount of people online to, you know, basically HRing the whole Jeopardy host process. It's absurd. It's an absurdity. And, you know, I'm telling you guys, man, liberalism is eating itself whole. It's just the dumbest thing to watch. And, you know, I honestly don't really make a distinction in my mind from those women at the school boards calling people who want their kids to wear masks demonic to these people online bitching about the Jeopardy host. I honestly think you're one and the same. I really do think you're two sides of the exact same coin, period. Like, it's hysteria. It's hysterical, bro.
Well, it's a desire to feel powerful, mm-hmm. right? Like, with the mask thing and the vaccine thing, like, it is one of the discrete instances in which, as an American citizen, you can exert a little bit of agency, you know? That's what it is. Like, you can refuse to get vaccinated. Like, oh my God, like, they all want me to get vaccinated. I'm gonna say, fuck no. You know, like, and that's like one of the few times, because other than that, like, we have no agency. Like, our boss can tell us whatever the fuck they want us to do, and we have to fucking ask, you know, they say jump and we say how high, you know? Like, that's the reality of life in America, is that we have no ability to fight back. We have no ability to exert agency, mostly because labor power has been destroyed in America, and capital has been globalized, and we're just fucking like little guys just yelling and hoping for better entertainment, hoping for that the people on the TV make us feel nice and warm and fuzzy, like Ted Lasso. That's what's going on with the whole vaccine thing and the mask thing, is that there's this little instance, this little window of opportunity for certain people to say, like, no, fuck you. And a certain percentage of the population is going to take that, because we have no power in any other realm. Same thing with the Jeopardy host. If a few people on Twitter get mad about the Jeopardy host, the thing, they're going to take them down. It's fucking great. And it feels good, you know, because we exerted a little bit of power.
Yeah. I just find it crazy, the spinelessness of these corporations, one. Because, like, I mean, just the idea that, like,
it's not worth it for them.
Yeah, I get it.
They don't care. They don't care either. Like, just fucking get them out.
Get them out. Exactly. like,
of course. I mean, that's what, like, they don't give a shit. Like, the fucking Jeopardy guy, just get some other one.
We just gotta run the show. Yeah. We just gotta.
They're gonna have to build a robot to host Jeopardy.
It's craziness. Yeah. Anyway, that's our show for today. Very happy to be back. Shouts to everybody supporting the show. Of course, again, shouts to Nando and producer Sean for bang up job during my vacation, locking in guests and just dope ass segments. So appreciate you guys for that. Make sure you're listening to every single other Count the Things offering. Centerfold, Pack Your Knives, the Friday Mailbag, you name it. Make sure you're checking those out. And of course, man, make sure to check us out every single Thursday morning. We put these joints out. If you're still listening on the Bomb Feed, please go subscribe to the actual Woke Bros feed. Subscribe to the feed now, please.
And rate. So, 5 stars.
Yeah, rate, review, 5 stars. You know, do the whole damn thing. Y'all know what to freaking do. Anyway, we're out of here. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Later.